Welcome to Canadian Politique. I'm Cameron Bishop.
I'm Mike McDougall.
Well, at long last, we're back to recap the last few weeks in Canadian politics, from the highly rated but barely tolerable Jane and Jody show to the Conservatives playing footsies with white supremacists while the media looks the other way. We've got more than enough to talk about this week. But first, Leanne is away for the next 2 weeks on vacation, so we will be joined by two different guest co-hosts. And this week, we are welcoming to the pod a recovering political staffer, blogger, Twitter trash-talking civil servant who goes by the name Neil Before Zod on Twitter because, as he says, it sounds a hell of a lot better than Neil from the corner cubicle in accounting. Neil, welcome to the pod.
Yes, thank you for having me on and allowing me to come and spark joy with the two of you. So,
yeah, not too much joy, but tell us who you are a little bit. I know we don't use last names, which, frankly, as somebody who used to be anonymous on Twitter, I completely appreciate. Now I'm not so careful, but quickly, tell us who you are.
Well, myself, I'm a civil servant. I live in the Greater Toronto Area. Previously, I've worked on Liberal campaigns. I've worked for the Liberal Party itself. And after that, I decided to, stay in the public sector, but move into government work.
Well, that's very, very good. And probably very glad that you're not working directly under Doug Hatchett Ford, given his budget that just came out the other day. At any rate, welcome to the pod. And you're also a longtime listener, or at least a listener of recent repute. Is that right?
I kind of did a deep dive on your podcasts. I like how it's concise within, 30 minutes or so. So you managed to pack a lot of discussion into that time. Not a lot of waste, not a lot of ranting, as you say, but yeah, an excellent podcast.
That's because I was told by Leanne and Mike that I had to knock it off. So on that score, let's just jump right into it. And the first thing we're going to be talking about is Jody and Jane.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of our lives.
Well, I'd hoped that by the time we returned to recording the pod, that season one of the Jody and Jane show would have been removed from primetime. However, that is not the case. So let's recap really quick what's happened in the last couple of weeks that we've not had the pod. One, we've seen Dr. Philpott and Jody Wilson-Raybould removed from the Liberal caucus. Jody Wilson-Raybould, of course, running around the country when her father's not in front of the camera for her, claiming victimhood, and worse, those claims being completely unchallenged by the opposition and the media, but I'm repeating myself, who are hungry for the SNC-Lavalin saga to, I think, take down the government, which increasingly looks likely. We've got Dr. Philpott suggesting she has more to say about the SNC-Lavalin saga than she's let on, and hints that it could provide even more context to this faux crisis. And we've also got Dr. Philpott raising points of privilege in the House of Commons, stating that her removal from the Liberal caucus was in breach of Conservative MP Michael Chong's Reform Act from the 2015 Parliament, and that it should have been subjected to a vote by caucus. The Speaker, of course, has ruled that it did not infringe on her privilege as a member of the House. You have vile MPs like Candace Bergen and Michelle Rempel hate tweeting about the Prime Minister and screaming that he's not a feminist. We've got Daughters of the Vote delegates turning their back last week to the Prime Minister when he was giving a speech talking about women in politics and the importance of standing up for what's right, because evidently the ones who were protesting the Prime Minister seem to believe that feminism means equality and equity, but also please treat us better than we would a male politician who did the exact same thing that Jody Wilson-Raybould and Jane Philpott have done. We've got the Prime Minister serving a libel notice against Andrew Scheer for his comments about the Prime Minister's activities related to SNC-Lavalin and goading him to take him to court. In fact, going so far as to repeat all these allegations outside the House of Commons so that he would not be protected by privilege. And the LPC poll numbers, Liberal poll numbers, are, depending on the day, either in the shitter or definitely on the rim of the bowl as a result of SNC-Lavalin. So gents, and I'm going to give the first kick to Neil today, when and how does the series come to a conclusion? Like dramatic, they're Jody and Jane driving off a cliff, like Thelma and Louise, or something a little bit more nuanced. How does this end?
I thought that it was going to end before the libel notice happened. I thought it was just going to kind of fade to black. You know, they both lay down like Bert and Ernie, eat their cookies, argue over cookies, and then it kind of fades to black. But it appears the Trudeau PMO decided that they were going to keep the story going for another little while with this libel notice.
So you don't like the libel notice?
I think it's, I understand the logic behind the libel notice. I just think that, I guess from a comms perspective, from the PMO perspective, it really would have been better for them just to let it go, because I honestly saw the volume of SNC-Lavalin stories kind of dying off a little bit, kind of dovetailing into the Doug Ford budget, the rally for education, those types of things. I thought that it would have been much better for them just to have let it stay down, because, I mean, the sheer the leader of the official opposition, they had that letter for a week, and they dropped it at the perfect time to get the story going again.
Yeah. Yeah, I see that. Mike, what do you think?
I'm going to agree with Neil on this one. It was before the letter came out. I mean, had we done a podcast last week, what I would have talked a lot about would have been how the media narrative is changing sides on this, right? I'm noticing a lot of people that I'm talking to are saying, this is so stupid. You know, obviously this is just a power play. It seemed like the public opinion was turning pro government again. People are starting to realize that this SNC-Lavalin scandal is not really a scandal. It is just a stupid manufactured thing that people like Andrew Coyne are just trying to pump for their own reasons. But serving the libel notice, I mean, let's be honest, Andrew Scheer reading it and like reading it out loud and doubling down was kind of funny. Like when I saw that, I was like, that's a power move, Scheer, for a guy that I didn't think had any backbone. I thought that was a pretty power move, and it did put it back in the media. And for what? Like, I don't see what the reason was for that. It was dying down, and public opinion was at the very least getting bored of this scandal, and now it's back in the news. So, I mean, we're talking about it, right?
It is so fucking boring. I can't. The first of all, the level of vitriol in Canadian politics right now is absolutely at a crescendo. Like I don't think I've ever seen anything as ugly as what we've seen in the last few weeks. But you know, for me, I mean, I know that this is, you know, first of all, let me just digress for a sec. I believe that the libel notice was necessary because we have seen Andrew Scheer going through now and deleting tweets that he said about the prime minister and dialing down the rhetoric across the board. You're seeing the media dial down the rhetoric a little bit more. You're seeing opposition MPs, with the exception of the hags from out west, Michelle Rempel and Candace Bergen. But you are seeing a little bit more of a measured tone, which has been missing. So I kind of think on that score, the prime minister had to do what he did. And frankly speaking, I want him to take Andrew Scheer to court, and I want Scheer to lose because I believe that he would. I believe that what he said, I mean, the other day, Candace Bergen, for example, was on Twitter before this had happened, saying that the prime minister was leading what was full on a criminal and completely guilty, called him a criminal. And I just thought that was way, way below the belt and way inappropriate. Now, that being said, it fits in with the vitriol that we're seeing in federal politics right now. And I look no further than Liberal MP Pam Damoff last night at question period, passing out at her desk. Now, Jane Philpott, Doug Yulfson, and Carolyn Bennett, all liberals, and in the case of Jane Philpott, a former Liberal cabinet minister, now independent, all three doctors went to attend to her. And you know what? They didn't miss a beat after that. Pam was shown outside the house. She's recovering. But you know, the vitriol didn't even dial down. It continued with the same hatred and spewing of venom that I think is really corroding these institutions of the country.
I agree with that, but aside, I mean, this is just anecdotally, but aside from, you know, like your Kinsella fanboys out there, I really think that public opinion is starting to see through that vitriol, and they're just like, the conservatives are making themselves look bad with how they're behaving. And the comments that I'm seeing are people just saying like, man, what are the conservatives doing at this point? Like, they're just getting played by Jody Wilson-Raybould and that whatever this fake lab scam is. That seems to be, and maybe it's just the media that I'm consuming, but I felt like there was a turn. So I just see, like, to what end is the suit for? Like, why bother doing it?
Well, I think at this point, now that he served notice, I feel he has to. I mean, Scheer keeps saying, oh, where's my summons? Where's my summons? Obviously kind of underplaying how the process works. But I guess to kind of agree with Mike, I felt that the vitriol and I felt that that was turning public opinion against the conservatives in the story a little bit. I noticed a lot of people on, I guess, kind of mushy middle conservatives were commenting on certain tweets saying, this is going over the top. We need to cut the hyperbole down a little bit.
Yeah, it's just been a very depressing thing. But I want this thing to end. And I get it that the libel notice has added more fuel to the fire. But, you know, at some point, this has to end. And I don't know if it's going to end with a floor crossing. I still believe that they will cross. I actually think that probably they will cross to the Conservatives or the Greens, possibly maybe the NDP. But I think Greens or the Conservatives, Jody and Jane. But irrespective of that, I think that they're going to do it closer to the election to try and like pick this scab off again. Because what they want is complete and utter defeat for the government. That is becoming clearer every single day.
Don't they realize, though, that if they were to cross the floor to the Conservatives, that this entire narrative that's been built up, this, it would be completely destroyed.
I mean, and transparent.
It's being chipped away right now. But if they were to cross to the Conservatives, I have a feeling that Canadian, I guess, on Twitter, like Canadian Poli would collectively kind of say, you know, F you.
I agree.
I would hope so, although Canadian public opinion of late has been very depressing. I can't believe, I mean, look, we've got allegations of false feminism being leveled against the prime minister and completely disregarding the progress that has been made over the last 3.5 years, and his poll numbers are in the shitter. Now, granted, the election is 6 months away, but that window is closing very, very fast, and the poll numbers are not moving in the right direction, and the level of rage that is out there among non-liberal supporters is problematic in the extreme. So maybe the car that's going to go over the cliff, like Thelma and Louise, is going to be the Liberal government, a one and done government, and all the progress rolled back over the last 4 years, whether it's poverty reductions or gender equality advances, or you know, making more money for the middle class, or the middle class doing better, you know, child benefits, whatever the case may be, lowest unemployment rate in what, 40 years. Record levels of people in the workforce, a diverse workforce. I mean, a fairer immigration system, an innovation agenda, you know, progressive trade policies, you name it. All going to be rolled back because Jody Wilson-Raybould was pissed off that she got moved to Veterans Affairs and decided to make a mountain out of a molehill. And it just, it's just very, very depressing. I mean, if the Conservatives win the election, which is looking increasingly likely this October, thanks in part will go to the SNC-Lavalin scandal and the media happily creating a mountain of dog shit out of what was barely a fart. And it's depressing. But I want to give a shout out to three journalists that have been honest, and that is Joan Bryden, Chantal Hebert, and Susan Delacourt, and also Joyce Napier. So the
Amy McPherson.
And Amy McPherson. They are calling it like they see it on this. And compare and contrast that. And Leanne has said this a number of times on the pod. Neil, you've probably heard this. I know Mike and I have. But Leanne has been, she said this is an HR problem, but it's motivated by these white Anglo-Saxon old fart men who are going after the prime minister, and it's steeped in jealousy. And I think that that has to be some element of this. I can't think of a government that's done so much good in so many years. And yes, they've had their warts and their failures, but for them to be staring down the brink of defeat with somebody like Andrew Scheer, it's galling.
Well, I have a theory in regards to, I'm worried about poll numbers myself. I do remember, though, in previous elections, I'm going back to the Chrétien years, that there always was that 6 to 7 month period before an election when numbers would kind of go down leading into the summertime. But I have a feeling that when the bright lights of the election shine on Andrew Scheer, he doesn't say what he want about Doug Ford. He has a constituency, and for some reason, he's charismatic to them.
Right.
Right. He can say folks 85 times, and the mouth breathers who support Doug Ford will be, yeah, get him, Doug. Yep. Andrew Scheer doesn't have that same type of charisma. He doesn't have that constituency. And I have a feeling that if Trudeau unties his hands from behind his back and starts throwing punches, that we could be looking at a change in the narrative leading up to the election.
Well, from your lips to God's ear, but let's talk a little bit now about Andrew Scheer's base and who he likes to flirt with and what might be underpinning some of these polling numbers. Let's talk about white nationalism in Canada. Now, we are, let's be clear, all of us are white males. So, you know, maybe it's a little bit rich coming from us, but none of us are white nationalists. But what is striking to me is the willingness of Andrew Scheer and the conservatives like Michelle Rempel, Candace Bergen, and others to embrace white nationalism, or at the very least to turn the other cheek and look the other way. And their willingness to embrace it so that, or I guess, as I say, to at least tacitly wink at it to ensure electoral success. I mean, we've seen the yellow vesters screaming about those who are different. I guess that's their economic anxiety when they spew racist bullshit on Parliament Hill. We've seen made up crap from the Conservative caucus about a crisis on our borders due to asylum seekers. A crisis, by the way, that doesn't seem to exist when SNC-Lavalin is in the news. We've seen the Prime Minister receiving threats to himself and his family from people who are white supremacist sympathizers or yellow vesters on Facebook or on a variety of different social media fora. We've seen leading members of Andrew Scheer's coming directly from rebel media, Hamish Marshall being one of them. Scheer is happily pals around with that racist skag, Faith Goldie. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. So what the hell is happening in Canadian media that this isn't getting attention? Like, a lot of this I know because of what's on Twitter or what's on Facebook, but that's only because I follow progressive people like yourselves or others. But this is not widely reported except for a handful of journalists. Like, I don't understand who has co-opted our newsrooms such that this is not an issue, Mike?
I want to blame what's happening in the States right now for this. And let me kind of explain that a little bit. I think that our media is being really careful because nobody's suggesting, for example, that Andrew Scheer is a racist. I'm certainly not, right? What I think we see happen, though, is that there's little to no filter on who they're meeting with, or, you know, there's a lot of people, you know, this kind of like this double branding where, you know, some people would say, well, obviously Faith Goldie is, you know, she's a freaking neo-Nazi, but you know, she does brand herself as not, and the Conservative Party is doing this woeful ignorance thing where they just kind of meet with everybody. And Canadian media, because of what's happening in the States, where it is getting a little ridiculous with how crazy American politics is right now, and they don't want to necessarily mirror the mistakes that American media are making, and they don't want to be accused of being, you know, for the left. And I think that right now the hot button issue for the left is, hey, there's a lot of friggin' white nationalists out there, and they are a serious problem in not only America, but in Canada. And when you say that, you're automatically branded by anyone on the right of being the left, and our media just doesn't want to be branded that way. That could be one of the reasons why.
So before, Neil, you jump in, and just Mike, to dovetail off of what you just said a little bit, Conservative Senator Leo Houssakos in a committee hearing this week said that he doesn't believe that there is a problem with white supremacy, white nationalism.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yep. Good old Senator Houssakos, whose only claim to fame in life has been dumped in at the trough of the Senate by former conservative Prime Minister Stephen Harper. So, I mean, like, there is there is obviously some willingness to look the other way and pretend it's not happening by, of course, a white guy, but a white conservative. And I think that unfortunately is infecting, obviously, that movement. And it certainly gives good conservatives a bad name. And there are a number of good conservatives out there. Charles Adler, for example, I'm not a big fan of his, but, you know, listening to how he's taken on Jason Kenney recently in an interview, going after him about the UCP supporting or getting support rather from white nationalists or people who bashed the LGBTQ community, you name it. And Adler has gone after Kenney very aggressively and basically said that this is not the man that he knows. But, you know, Neil, you want to jump in about what you think is going on and why it's being ignored, except on social media for the most part.
Well, in a case like this, I look at what the common denominator is. And for me, you brought up Hamish Marshall, and that's it for me. Hamish Marshall was one of the founding directors of the Rebel Media. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to think of all these Fisher-Price fascists who got their training wheels at Rebel Media, like Faith Goldie, Laura Loomer, Lauren Southern, Gavin McInnes. It's like the all-star team for the racist alt-right. It really is. And when people say, well, Hamish, he didn't have any editorial direction, but I kind of bring up the example of someone's building a guillotine who needs your help. So you register yourself as a director of the Guillotine Corporation. You help them create the business plan. You help plan strategy. You market the guillotine and you hire those who use it. doesn't that make you complicit for how the guillotine is used?
Yep.
I think that since Hamish Marshall has been involved with Andrew Scheer's campaign and the Conservative Party of Canada campaign, that there has been a troubling change in how they market, in I guess kind of the mass messaging that every conservative minister of parliament seems to use. And to me, it all boils down to him.
Yeah. And I mean, there's others too. There's Georgianne Burke. I mean, she is widely known by many to have founded like an anti-Islam or certainly one that, you know, if she didn't, if it didn't actively go after Islam, certainly was sympathetic to those that did. And she was tweeting the other day about a bunch of crap that a lot of people called not anti-migrant, but anti-diversity. So you're right. I mean, that rot is in OLO. And the sad part is that they are right knocking on the doors of 24 Sussex and the PMO. And that is terrifying to think that in 6 months we could have Donald Trump light up here in Canada, or howdy doody, or whatever the hell.
We're going to have Eric Trump. Not even Donald Trump.
No, I know.
We're going to have Eric Trump.
We're going to have the stupid Trump. And I mean, that's saying something, because they're all pretty stupid. Yeah, I mean, I don't know how to solve it, though. Like, I would like to come out of this with an idea about how do we push back effectively against it. I mean, I think, Neil, you've done a good job. I know, Mike, you've done a little bit as well. I think we try and do this on the pod, like, to kind of call attention to this. But, you know, it's staggering to me the number of people that they hear it, but they don't care. That it is something that they're prepared.
Or they don't think it's really happening.
Yeah.
Like they're kind of like, well, yeah, I care about this deeply and I'll tweet about it. But like, really, that's not really happening in Canada. Canadians have this idea that bad stuff like that doesn't happen here. It's kind of like the other thing, like, well, we're Canadians, we're good. We almost believe our own marketing campaign, and that can work against us in certain things like this.
You know, we've said it many times, is that we have a racism problem in Canada. We have had a racism problem for years. I mean, just look at how we treat Indigenous peoples in this country. I mean, they live in third world conditions. They have gotten markedly better since this government was elected in the last 3.5 years. But I mean, they are, you know, there is a stigma associated with being an Indigenous person. There's a stigma associated with being, if you're an African Canadian living in Nova Scotia, you've got a stigma associated there because there's a long history with racism there. You know, I mean, the Viola Desmond story, I'm sure everybody is very familiar with. But it just, you know, like I struggle to understand how we effectively push back or break through the shield of people who hear it, don't care, or at least won't acknowledge that there's a problem. And I that's a scary time, because I think we are seeing south of the border what happens when there is a huge degree of indifference to tackling this head on. And I'm not too sure that it's going to be government that solves it so much that it's going to be us. And I don't know what the way to solve it would be. Well, gents, that's it. So that's a very quick show today. Neil, you came on a good day when we kept things really, really tight, mostly because Mike just needed to get the hell out of here by 4 o'clock. But I can't thank you enough. And you keep doing exactly what you're doing, and we'll have you back on the pod again soon, because
it's a good Twitter account.
It really is. So, Neil, what's your Twitter handle for everybody?
It's at That's Mr. Neil. I'm quite proud that Andrew McDougall the other day in McLean's dubbed me the king of the lib bots. So, you don't have a lot to live up to. So,
but wait, Neil, there's something more. You also have a Clover, do you not? By your Twitter handle, as I do at Canadian Politique. Does that?
I don't right now.
Oh,
actually.
You removed it, right? Because you had been accused of being head of the Clover cabal.
Yeah, I was the David Koresh of the. Of the,
I remember the that. Culture, I do remember so. That. That was great.
Yes. So.
Yeah. No. That's what I thought of right away. That I was the David Koresh of Canadian Poli. But you know, I saw a few people with shamrocks or clovers in their handles say some pretty horrible things, and I decided at that point to take it out. I know Patty. I knew Patty very well. I believed in it, but I've never been one to jump in on that. But when I seen that it may have been co-opted, you know, in a similar way to the Yellow Fest, I decided to remove it.
Well, yeah. And just so everybody knows, Patty O'Limerick was a Twitter longstanding personality on Twitter. She was a progressive tweeter. She had a lot to say. She wasn't afraid to tackle the people who would bully others or to, you know, push back against conservative propaganda. She was fantastic. And then she was threatened with being doxxed on Twitter. And she subsequently left the platform and she's gone. And so because she was Patty O'Limerick, that is what the Twitter, the Clover, actually signifies and why so many people have it on there. You're right. There has been an effort to co-opt it, but you know, Patty, if you're listening, and I know you do listen to the pod, you are appreciated. And it really is upsetting to me. You know, Neil, you mentioned Andrew McDougall, who's the PM Harper, former PM Harper's ex-director of communications, who, by the way, is ensconced in London, England, and opining about our politics from there. You know, but I've been
He's not horrible.
No, he hasn't. He isn't. I mean, but my thing is you know what? It's a great being from the cheap seats and being able to carp away while you're sitting in the UK making a living. I mean, thank you very much. But no, but my thing is you know, media personalities, whether it's Andrew, whether it's others who are more aggressive with going after people who have a Clover by their name on Twitter and trying to call them bullies or call them out as
psychopaths. They've been called psychopaths
and say absolutely nothing. Well, Andrew Scheer and the conservatives, dry hump white nationalists, and Jason Kenney and his party, you know, Jason Kenney, who is in the 80s, active against, actively keeping gays away, or gays in San Francisco away from their dying lovers who had AIDS, you know, all these people are out there and they are not getting kicked around half as much as some of the people with Clovers. So take a lesson, Canadian media, wake up. There's a lot of other important shit going on than whether or not somebody has an emoticon next to their name on Twitter with Clover. Anyway, that's my rant, boys.
All right.
All right, thanks, gents. We'll do this again.
Thank you
take
very
care,
much.
Guys.
All right.
Have a good night.
Again, take care.